Bloody Elbow presents MMA Depressed Us, the show that looks back at some fights that were so bad that they were good, fights that were just incredibly bad, and fights that were deeply disappointing.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the MMA Depressed Us with me, Zane Simon, and my co-host, Connor Rebush. We are without our third wheel today, Phil McKenzie, and it's a real tragedy, but we've heard that he's, you know, he's on double secret probation from charm school this week, so. that's British enough, right?
Yeah. Phil's an MI6. He's currently he's currently away in Hamburg trying to unearth the origins of the famed British chicken burger.
That's right.
You follow
trying to, he's trying to push British culture on the locals. Marching mixed around results. With a flag.
Mixed results, but he's buggered quite a few young German lads, so. I don't know.
We don't, yeah.
Those British people. Let's be real. Awful, awful culture. I'm glad he's gone.
That's right. That's right. We're both very glad to see the back of Phil. Connor especially.
Although, having said that, we have one of the more nefarious, sinister, bad fight lineups I can recall, and it really does feel like if Phil is that bad and that British, he probably deserves to be here to experience it with us.
It's true.
He's kind of getting off scot-free.
Very much. Yeah. We're letting him off. He really is getting let off the hook here, and mm-hmm. As much as I'm happy to not have to work with him this week, I would definitely like to subject him to what we have in store for all of you, which is a worst of 2021 fight lineup. Mm. And we're kind of hitting our classic formula here of years past when we tried to make this a very structured idea and not just a loose collection of BS.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're going to have one good bad fight, just a complete sloppy, still fun but wildly underskilled contest, and our bad fight, just a fight that sucked and had no reason to suck and is just bad, and that's all there is to it. And then of course capping things off with our major disappointment of the year.
A crushing disappointment main event. Yes.
So for those of you following along with us who want to watch these fights as we do, we're watching them all on ESPN Plus this time around. And we are starting off with Cody Brundage versus Nick Maximov at UFC 266. Middleweight.
Zane assures me is a fight that happened in the UFC last year.
Yes. And it was highly hyped because Nick Maximov is one of the Diaz guys.
Oh.
And more proof that beyond Nick and Nate Diaz, I don't know that the Diaz camp is necessarily producing the highest quality of prospects.
Hmm.
And then we're going to follow that up with a fight from UFC Fight Night, Rozenstruik versus Sakai. Roman Dolidze versus Laureano Staropoli. So middleweight so far really dominating the theme.
Mm-hmm.
And cap the whole thing off, with what had to have been the most disappointing fight of the
year.
Both
the biggest disappointment and I think straight up just the worst fight of the year.
Yeah, because it really, like, we were looking, you had a list pulled up of, like, other disappointing main events, you know, ranked for UFC cards over 2021.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the fights at the bottom were fights that everybody with a half a brain would have known were bad going in.
Yeah.
You know, we thought about doing something like Shevchenko versus Lauren Murphy or Ladd versus
Dumont.
Mm-hmm. Fights like that. But, like, there was no surprise about how those fights went, you know.
And even then, they weren't that bad. Like, not to give the UFC too much credit, but, like, it's pretty rare that you have a main event that is, like, five rounds of just completely atrocious inaction.
Which is why, like, we're getting ready to rewatch Thiago Santos versus Johnny Walker.
Yeah.
What a miserable, miserable fight.
Yeah. The disappointment could not have hit harder because it's just, even if you had zero expectations, it would be an abysmally uninteresting fight.
Yep.
I'm not looking forward to it.
No.
I don't want to watch it again.
As always, if you want to watch along with us, we're just going to start the videos right at the beginning. I will count down 3, 2, 1, go. Not in that kind of speed or rhythm, because where would be the fun in that? And Connor will try and jump in for the beginning of round one. And
should be easier. I have no problem, clearly, as I've just demonstrated, interrupting you alone.
No, no. It's true. You've never been afraid to just talk over me at any given opportunity.
No, I feel pretty prepared for my one job this episode.
Yeah. Sure as hell won't be being funny or topical.
No, no, God, no. That's on you, buddy. Good luck.
All right. So we're going to kick off Cody Brundage versus Nick Maximov, UFC 266. Starting in 3, 2, 1, go.
That was pretty rhythmic, I gotta be honest.
Yeah, I didn't quite, right.
You have time to improve. Oops, I paused for just a second, we're fine. Oh. Now, which of these is the Diaz guy? Is it the guy with the bad tattoos or the guy with the fewer bad tattoos?
The guy with the bad tattoos.
Okay.
Maximov.
All right.
Very much a guy that is, you know, getting the kind of like, oh, he's going to be amazing. He's going to be a future champ kind of, you know, hype.
I'm beginning to very vaguely remember this now.
He had an absolutely also miserable, like, it would be impressive, except that it was not impressive fight on the Contender Series, where he took, like, a short notice fight against a heavyweight on Contender Series, and he was, like, 210 pounds,
hell yeah.
And the heavyweight was, like, 245. Sweet. But it was very much like, you know, 6 foot, huge beer gut, 255 pounds. And Maximov got sprawled out hard several times on his way to it. Mm-hmm. It was still a very ugly win.
All right, here we go, folks. Shut up, Zane. Shut up. Round one about to begin. Quiet. Shh. Here we go. Zane, shut the fuck up. Round one begins now. All right, great. Now, whatever you were saying.
Yeah, no. It was one of those things, like, yeah, it should be totally cool and respectful. Like, you took on a heavyweight? That's awesome.
Yeah.
But also, like, you almost got out-grappled by a heavyweight. Ooh. But yes, we have a battle of two wrestlers.
First strike fighting. Of the fight, flying knee, always a good sign.
And at the time I was watching this, I was telling you before we got started, my personal theory is that Maximov doesn't know how to box from his wrestling stance and doesn't know how to wrestle from his boxing stance.
Hmm.
So whenever he's trying to shoot,
there was an attempted shot off the back foot.
Yeah.
Not a good shot. That was from Orthodox.
Yeah.
I've been noticing this more and more. This is my favorite bad MMA striking technique.
Mm-hmm.
Is people stepping through to throw the right hand.
Yeah. That whole shift idea that, like...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's so much about... Oh, man, that was a horribly ugly 1-2 just a second ago.
Yeah. Well, that was an attempted shift that kind of made a... Okay, we're in southpaw now.
And that suddenly he's a much better striker.
Oh, okay. All right. So it's from the other southpaw, way around.
Yeah, it's the other way around.
All right,
when he's an orthodox, and that's when he wants to wrestle, and there his striking is totally miserable and off balance.
Boy.
And then he switches to southpaw, and it just looks like, oh, wait, no, that's a much more functional striking game.
Yeah. All right, southpaw, let's see. He at least seems to have some ability to, like, step in and cover distance with his backhand.
Yeah.
Not a single jab.
No.
So still not really like a southpaw boxer.
No.
His timing looks better. There was a southpaw shot.
Yeah. Didn't get much out of it, though.
Uh-huh. He certainly didn't get a takedown out of it.
No. So, yeah. I think that whole shift thing is definitely like, I remember when who was the Japanese fighter who was notable for doing that? Hugness, I think, was his nickname.
You're talking about, I can't believe I'm forgetting his name. I love the dude. Start with a T.
Yeah.
Come on. Oh, I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah, you have to look it up.
It's embarrassing. I really like this guy's fights. He had the super brave effort against Volkanovski.
Yeah, I know his nickname, so.
Mizuto Hirota.
Yeah, there we go.
Does not start with a T, but it does contain T's, Zane. You gotta give me that. Gotta give me that.
That's right. Freaking Wordle-ass memory.
What's the thing with Wordle? This fight isn't interesting enough to just talk about it. So I saw somebody post a thing today saying it's uncouth to share the answers.
Sure.
Because this is a thing.
Oh, no, yeah. Oh, they're just saying it's uncouth to share, like, the little graph or the little display that shows how you did.
Well, no. People are constantly sharing those, but none of them actually contain the letters. So it's not interesting to look at as someone who likes word games.
Sure.
What's the point? If you're not showing off that you got the word by showing the word, why do I care? Like, there's a lot of five-letter words. You're not going to spoil the game for anyone.
Game. The same word every day for everyone.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, that's why it's uncouth.
I see.
Yeah, everybody gets the same word every day.
I see. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've played a game like that with pen and paper for many years.
It's called Hangman.
Not Hangman. No, it's a game where you and your opponent each pick a five-letter word, and then you guess five-letter words, and you tell each other how many letters it has in common with your word. And by process of elimination, you try to be the first one to guess the opponent's word.
So okay, I'm now more invested in this fight than I am.
Zane, listen, it's a very fun game. you promised me a good bad fight. So far, I'd like to continue talking about Wordle. So far, it's not great. It's not giving me the energy and life I'm going to need to sustain me through the next two fights.
I mean, they're landing a lot, and Brundage's face looks really funny when he gets hit.
That's true, I guess. But the next two fights are going to have a vampiric effect on me.
It's true.
I want to feel like a leech, like a bloated, blood-filled leech, so that I have plenty of blood to spare for the next two. And so far, I'm still hungry.
Oh, what a hideous metaphor.
I'm still wan, Zane. I need to be just pulsating with foreign blood. Well, these fans are cool. Really good energy. These people are so cool. I would like to see Don Fry punch every one of those people in their faces.
It is, you know, I mean, Don Fry, he's definitely, the man is an ass, but it is hard to feel at all bad about him punching some random dude at a UFC event.
Some guy is like drunk and being clearly, like, even from a distance without any of the words, is being obnoxious. And Don Fry hits him with the first jab he's ever thrown.
That's true.
The first time I've ever seen Don Fry throw a short, straight punch.
That's right. You wonder if he's having, like, a whole epiphany on the drive home after that.
Wait a minute. What was I thinking? No, I think it causes me to think that the reason Don Fry hasn't been boxing well throughout his long MMA career is that he considered it to be like he was in there trying to do damage, and he considers a jab to be polite.
Yeah, probably.
I think he was being very genteel to that man, and that's why he hit him with a clean, straight punch.
You noticed at the moment of the impact, there was a little like monocle popped up in over Don Fry's eye, a little top hat.
Uh-huh. He jabbed him with his pinky up. All right. Zane, it's still going.
Yeah, no, it's still a fight. It's... I mean, there's stuff happening, right? Like,
yeah. It's not going to get better than this for the rest of the show.
Yeah.
I have to hand you that, but.
Yeah. Okay, this isn't really.
Such a crushing episode. I'm already having such a bad time. Oh my god. I'm going to have to get a beer between this and the next fight. I swear to god.
Start doing shots.
I've got some tall boy IPAs in the fridge. I'm going to get drunk. It's the only way I'm going to make it through this. Afternoon drunk.
Your girlfriend's going to come home to just you laying in a pile of beer cans.
Yeah.
This will be just like every other day.
I told Zane to fill me with the blood. He didn't have the blood, so I had to do beer. I'll explain in between vomits. Here we are, Maximov, back to the wrestling. I do remember thinking at the time, does not look like a Diaz fighter.
No.
Which is... Oh, God, why would you do it?
Brendan. Yeah.
Why would you drop for the guillotine?
Seriously. Daniel Cormier giving a breakdown for the 8 trillionth time.
Yeah.
Just like it's brand new again as to why it's a problem if you drop for a guillotine.
Yeah. He's never wrong.
No.
He says the same thing about leg locks every time they happen. And here's the problem, he says, after it doesn't work. I do like that he sort of waits for it to not work before he criticizes that it might be risky.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know. The man wouldn't want to look like an ass.
No, no, no. Certainly not why we got into podcasting, which is how Daniel Cormier views this job.
That's right. He comes from a deeply anti-Semitic place. That's really what it is.
Yeah. And yet he claims to be pro-Israel.
Well, I mean, I think that that would be semantics, right?
Well, this is... I guess you're right. There's layers to this incredibly stupid joke. Oh, here we go. Okay, 2-on-1. We're escaping the body triangle by brute force. But, okay.
Yeah.
Continue turning. No, no.
No.
Oh.
Yeah.
This is your fault, Zane.
I know.
This is the disappointment. Because at least I know what I'm getting into with the next two.
I remembered this being sloppy fun than just sloppy, but.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Well, if you enjoy a fight where one fighter has a clear positional advantage, but simply no idea how to progress beyond that, and the opponent is incompetent in terms of preventing that positional advantage, you're going to love the next fight.
Yeah.
I just wish one of these guys had a really stupid, smug face. Then I would really... Oh, wait! The next fight's going to have that, too. Great, great.
That's right. We're really bringing it for you.
I can't wait.
Oh, man. I just the other day, somebody... I stumbled across somebody on Twitter... who saw the most recent Contender Series or payouts for Contender Series guys who got to the UFC.
Uh-huh.
And was shocked because they thought that your level of performance on Contender Series dictated your starting UFC salary.
Oh.
And
why did they think that?
I can't imagine.
I mean, that does, to be honest, sort of sound like a thing the UFC would do.
Yeah, but that would be like a generous thing that the UFC
You're right. You're right. No, they would do. That's why they do the one-time bonus based on performance. They would never promise you any kind of sustained paycheck in return for an impressive performance.
Yeah, no. And I mean, that it's such a mill of just anybody who signs up for the Contender Series, you're basically just signing up. You are guaranteeing the UFC that you will take whatever offer they give you.
Yeah.
So why would they give you more than that?
Yep.
And there then, yeah.
Brundage's corner has told him that he needs a finish.
And Maximov is trying to box out of an orthodox stance, which
and means... So far, they've pretty much both just thrown... Ooh. That was funny. So far, they've pretty much both just thrown rear overhands. And the first one not to do that was Brundage with a left hook that sort of dropped Maximov.
Yeah. Who then went southpaw and shot. And
it was not a good shot, even.
It was a really bad shot, yeah.
He goes to his knees every single time. Oh, no. Get an underhook, Brundage. What are you doing? No, get off your knees! You fool!
Foolish fool.
Adjust to the position!
Just giving up his back instead. Oh. That was the answer. Just give up your back.
Oh, what a sad, sad response to that wrestling attack from Maximov.
Yeah.
I've been watching a lot of chess videos lately, Zane.
That definitely sounds more interesting right now.
Yeah, yeah. That was like the equivalent of when like a chess player is forced to just like put one of their pieces right back on the spot where it started from.
Mm-hmm.
They call that setting up for the next game. And it is like sad and demoralizing. And, you know, it's like just completely giving up the initiative. That's what that was in wrestling terms. Like, I guess you didn't get finished. Good job.
Yeah.
He's back on his. All right. Single defense now. Split your stance, you bastard. Oh, my God. No. Yes, okay. There's life in him yet.
Not this is more the kind of active bad fight misery I remember.
Yeah, this is better.
Yeah.
Not complex life.
No.
More of a single cellular sort of
Yeah, life. we're more evolutionary soup right here.
Yes. There's a primordial early stage of life in him yet.
Yeah.
He's broken the hands.
As Carl Weathers would say, we got a primordial stew going.
Throw in a rhizome, a couple enzymes, baby. Got a primordial stew going.
Oh, man.
This is all right. I could tolerate a whole fight of this. At least he's coming up with mostly ineffective answers, but he's landing some shots. And he is constantly coming up with answers.
This is a great example of two people getting utterly devoted to a game that works for neither of them.
Yeah.
Like
Brundage, this though. Brundage is landing some very good shots.
Yeah. Absolutely refusing to separate. He's finally landing some good shots, but he's been hitting a crap ball this time.
Yeah, but Maximov, to your earlier point, appears to have no idea of how to connect one part of an MMA game to another.
Yeah.
And that includes striking in a grounded position or avoiding strikes or anything.
Yeah.
He's full on wrestling mode.
Yep.
That was kind of a cool back take, I guess.
Yeah. It was a nifty back take in there, but that also just feels like Brundage being so incredibly static anytime he gets positional advantage. That
it's true.
He literally just let a guy shrimp and move around and take his back.
There we go. This is great. I love these. These are horribly messy scrambles, but they are pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like this I said, at least this round, Brundage has been trying dumb things the whole time.
Yeah. And Maximoff has been totally ineffectively going from position to position without actually managing to make anything happen out of any of them.
He ends up in a rear crucifix. Oh my god. Well, you know what? I'm somewhat full of blood. I'm turgid, Zane. I'm this close to turgid.
You are barely tumescent at this point.
Nate Diaz is out in the crowd, like, hyping up his boy. He's going for a fist bump. There appears to be nobody there to return the fist bump.
Within, like, 20 feet.
Somehow after that fight, no one came running to give Nate Diaz a fist bump for that. A lot of wrestling from the knees, man. Not good MMA wrestling, I gotta say.
No.
The setups weren't there, but also the shots themselves did not look like what I expect to work in this sport.
No. This is from like a guy who's supposed to be like a wrestling grappling savant.
Yeah. Didn't see it. Who wins? I guess Maximov has to win, right? He got the first two rounds.
Yeah, he got the first two rounds.
I mean, I think you could, like, no one would, but you could argue 10-8 in that second round. He really achieved nothing.
Yeah.
And took quite a lot of damage by the end.
Yeah, no. He won't get a 10-8.
But... No, they never would. No. And I think there's a case not to as well. I mean, he at least...
Yeah, I mean, I would...
Quote-unquote competing the whole time.
Exactly. I remember there was an argument about that with a recent fight that I can't remember now. Where somebody was like, you know, it was somebody winning every grappling scramble, and the grappling scrambles were constant. And somebody was like, oh, that should be a 10-8. And it's just like, no, if the scrambles are constant, then it means that they're not dominating enough of the position.
Yeah, I think
to get a 10-8, basically.
More than fair. That's a good reaction to that. I appreciate him stepping and taking the fight. And DC made a face that can only be described as saying, yeah, I guess. I guess I appreciate it too. Only because I'm being paid to. All right. Do I want to watch these replays? Can I close the tab, Zane?
Yeah. No, you can close. Let's move on.
Closing the tab.
Let's move on to your selection.
That's right. And I will not lie and say that this is anything like a fun fight. It is miserable. Well, just so you know.
Yeah.
Hold on. I'm going to grab a beer. You set it up.
Okay, yeah, no. We're watching an absolutely... I'm disappointed, personally. I feel bad, not because this fight was awful, which it was, but... For the first few fights of his career, Laureano Staropoli hit the UFC as a really fun fighter, you know? That was kind of his hallmark. Like, Staropoli, when Staropoli got to the UFC, he was bad, but he was fun.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And whereas Dillidze has never been fun.
But that's what makes this fight so disappointing to me, is that the end of Staropoli's career was so much of a clearly, this man has been broken by fighting in the UFC, because now he is no fun at all.
And what, can you pinpoint anything that happened actually in the UFC? I mean, what did it?
Let me see. Let me pull up his actual record here, see if I can figure out what fight it was.
Because he had like an exciting, exciting like overperformance in his debut, right?
Yeah, his debut was against Hector Aldana.
I'm remembering the fight with Thiago Alves. Yeah. And that was like, here's a veteran, super high output kind of fight. And Stropoli was in there looking like an Italian Jimmy Crute, you know, like maybe everything wasn't great, but damn, was he trying hard the entire time.
I think it was just the Salikov means fights back to back.
Yeah, that's rough.
Where you had two fighters who could not only land really hard on him, but were just so clearly technically better than him at all points.
He also missed weight in that means fight, which makes you wonder if other things were going on for him.
Yeah, well, this is his first fight at middleweight that we're about to watch, so.
Okay.
I think it was just like fighting two people that were so clearly, had such a clear advantage over him. It just made him, I think probably made him feel like he had to be a more technical, cautious fighter to win. And that just, you know, if your only talent before was aggression and output, becoming more cautious is not going to leave you. It leaves you with nothing at all.
Right. Yeah.
All right.
Which is the curse of becoming technical.
Let's jump in and watch this Staropoli Dolidze bout.
All righty.
Starting in 3, 2, 1, go. Ah.
I already drank my whole beer. It's gone, Zane.
Just shotgunned it.
Yep. I didn't even realize it. I was drinking that entire time.
Get you an IV drip. Just slowly leak the alcohol into your bloodstream.
Oh. All right, back on tattoo critique. What are Laureano Staropoli's tattoos? That looks like Johnny Cash on the right arm?
Yeah, I was going to say like late Vegas Elvis, but Johnny
Cash. Yeah. I think it's Johnny Cash.
Especially MMA fighters, they've got a real thing for Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
Not that Johnny Cash, you know, he'd make some awesome music, but it is funny how much like MMA fighters glom onto that, like, he speaks for us prison folk identity.
MMA, a sport dominated by like mostly pretty comfortable middle class kids. Yeah, Johnny Cash speaks for me. I was a prisoner in my parents' house until I was 24 years old.
I mean, to be fair, a lot of the ways that fighters end up living during the early years of their MMA life is a lot. It's a lot, you know, prison adjacent. A lot of very angry aggro dudes sharing small apartments.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how different is the environment of jail going to be than Colby Covington and Jorge Masvidal sharing an apartment?
More annoying than prison, surely. Can you imagine the late night conversations?
I'm just thinking that if you got thrown into that environment as an additional roommate, the chances of you getting assaulted with a broom handle are not zero.
So there was Staropoli, landed some low kicks.
Yeah. And immediately got taken down.
Looked like maybe he was going to do something, and then the much bigger natural middleweight just takes him down easily. We're on the back, and this is the rest of the fight, folks. Get used to it.
So I got to ask at this point, because we're here watching him. Do the rumors that Roman Dolidze ran off with JP Baez's wife endear you further to him, actually endear you to him, or are they just another vote against him?
Literally nothing to me.
Yeah, no.
I don't see why I don't, you know, Am I like mad on JP Baez's behalf?
No, I wouldn't be mad on his behalf.
I have no idea what kind of guy he was, what kind of boyfriend or husband or whatever. I can say that Ms. Velismus is probably too hot for him. But frankly, she's much too hot for Roman Dolidze too. So
it's okay. She has absolutely zero filter about what she puts out into the world at all, too. Great. So I think, you know.
Has she said some horrible, off-putting things? I haven't paid attention.
Well, mostly she's just been, you know,
putting her
talking about how she doesn't want to talk about her exploding personal relationship, but she can't stop talking about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a classic.
And putting it out. And, like, very clearly, too, she's saying things like, my lawyers are like, hey, shut up. You really shouldn't say any of this stuff. And I know that, but I want to say it anyway.
That's good. I should look into that. That sounds great.
And, you know, also then claiming that she only married J.P. Bays because so he could get a green card was really top-level MMA brain thinking.
That's good. I should investigate this more. It sounds like some really classy drama. Now, Zane.
Yeah.
I praised Cody Brundleridge. Brundleridge in the last fight.
Yep.
Grundlebridge. For not attempting good ideas, but attempting many ideas in the third round. How much of this do you, just at a guess, think Staropoli is going to put up with before he attempts even one idea? So far, I gotta say, this is not how you deal with a rear waist cinch.
No.
Nothing will not stop the rear waist cinch. I can say that with confidence. And there was an attempt to do something. He tried to
He tried to kick him in the nuts from, like, back between his legs.
He tried to do the that's my purse defense.
That's right. He's going to hold his keys in his palm, in between his fist now. He's going
to come out for round two with a kubaton in his hand.
Oh.
He's trying to do, like, a Harai Goshi reap throw without any control of the hands.
Yeah.
No leverage. He is really not attacking the hands at all. There's a one hand. Okay, here we go.
Dominic Cruz talking about someone hugging him, and I have to imagine that that's a fairly foreign topic.
Just like being hugged. I know all about that. As Dominic. 10 seconds of dead air follow that remark.
I mean, if ever somebody sounded like they didn't get hugged enough,
for sure,
Dominic Cruz sounds like he could have used a lot more tender love and care in his life.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god,
this is really terrible.
I mean, I can complain about Staropoli, but what is Dulidze doing? What's his plan here? He hasn't attempted anything.
He's just really clingy. He's just codependency.
Codependent, yeah.
Yeah.
This is a toxic relationship we're witnessing right now. I just think it's embarrassing. Dulidze has the worst face of all time. He looks a full weight class bigger than Staropoli. He looks huge standing next to him. And he gets one takedown to start the fight, and then he can't progress beyond a rear waist cinch at all. He can't even get him down again from that position.
It doesn't even really seem like he's trying to get him down.
No.
The thing.
He appears really... He's like a worse version of violent Bob Ross. Like, at least that dude got the goddamn body triangle every time. He would get people down. Or jump on their back or do something. Terrible first round.
Yeah. Man, I really... ESPN leaving the commercials in all of these is really like...
Yeah, it's great.
It's amazingly... It really makes the platform that much worse.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad I pay for it. I love paying to watch ads. All right. How soon until we get to the exact same position? I mean, look, Dulidze does look much bigger than Staropoli. Yeah,
no question. I mean,
even further from the camera, foreshortening aside, he's still... Okay, there's the takedown.
Yeah, there's the takedown. Staropoli butt scoots all the way to the fence.
Scoots to the fence. He's hip-heisting. He's going to get back to his feet. Guess what happens next?
No, he gets up.
Mm-hmm.
And Dulidze fails to throw a knee and then starts kneeing him in the calf and is now going to push him all the way around the cage several times.
We're back. Staropoli is once again not his corner, by the way. I don't think they told him to fight the hands or he doesn't know how to get out of a rear waist cinch. He doesn't know that you, like, grab the bottom hand. He doesn't know that you drive your hips forward. Okay, to Lidze, there we go.
Yeah, he's reshooting.
Another takedown. I bet this is going to turn into a rear waist cinch very soon.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there we are. Hold the leg,
and there we are. Hey, magic.
Right. Back up to the feet.
Almost tried to get a hook in for a second there.
But he thought about it. There was a sort of attempt to thrust the hips and break the grip.
Starpole is now trying to break the grip actively.
I mean, sort of actively.
Yeah.
That's not an effective looking 2-on-1. He's got no leverage. No.
Yeah.
You're supposed to stuff the hands down and move your feet. And hey, I didn't even remember that. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This is unprecedented. I lied. Something happened.
Oh, man. Like I said, it really does feel like Staropoli has fallen apart over the latter half of his UFC career.
Yeah.
God, look at there's look a lot at of panic in what he does.
Look at Dolidze's face, Zane. What is it about his facial expression?
I don't know.
He looks evil to me. I can't say that's all I can say about it. He looks his eyes are filled with hate for all of God's creatures. Here we go. Back to the double leg. Staropoli is going to do a hip heist and get back to his feet.
This does make for a good MMA villain, though. Like,
oh, my God.
Just the guy who is going to promise violence upon you and then just hold you for 15 minutes.
Yes, yeah, Sport Killer. That's his villain name.
He's just watched a lot of John Jones footage, but only latter era John Jones.
Mm. And it wasn't fight footage. It was all like John Jones in the club. I'm like, I have to emulate this guy's personality. He's got a sparkling charisma. This seems like a guy who easily makes friends.
Well, that's what he's trying to do. Maybe he's just trying to make a friend out of Staropoli.
Hence all the hugging.
Yeah.
Yeah, he actually is
sitting there saying, man, I wish I was in there.
God, I wish that were me. All right, Staropoli has managed to spin into just a regular body lock. Another position he does not appear to just have any real technical solution to. But you can't blame him, Zane. That's not a position you come across ever in an MMA gym.
No one's
ever trying to underhook you.
And for Dolidze, he seems just as confused by having double underhooks, frankly.
Which is, it's doubly confusing because, all right, another reap throw attempt from Staropoli.
Yeah, it actually worked for a second. He was actually able to. Dolidze got thrown from double underhooks.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Just Keith Peterson should take 2 points from each of them right now. No explanation required.
Bring back the yellow card for this fight only.
Sorry, fellas. This is a Subway punch card. It's all I had on my wallet, but each of you lose $10,000 because I've given you this. But you get 2 more subs and you get a free $5 footlong. Oh my God. You know what's especially infuriating about Dolidze's wrestling approach in this fight? He's able to get a takedown at the beginning of each round with ease.
Yeah.
It would appear that he could just muscle his way into better wrestling positions whenever he really wanted to. Doesn't look like Staropoli can stop it.
I think it's very clearly like, you know, Dolidze seems like he's probably a pretty good athlete naturally.
Uh-huh.
So when he's at a distance and shooting, it's all about speed and power,
I guess.
So it's easy to catch Staropoli off balance with a big burst of speed and power and get him down. But as far as like technical proficiency if he's going to spend the rest of the fight right in Staropoli's face, then suddenly that dynamic is gone, and it's just about trying to be a technical wrestler that doesn't work.
I guess so. I don't think he has to be the technical wrestler, though. He's still much bigger than Staropoli.
He certainly is, but it's just, you know, if you're going to be in upper body clinches, it does kind of become about technique a little, because more than a shot, because you're not getting any knee drive and leg drive. So you've got to be able to off balance and, you know, other stuff. I don't know. Like, I shouldn't have to coach these people. Damn it.
This guy keeps taking me down. I should throw nothing but kicks. Just throw body punches. Why does no one ever think of that?
It's, you know, I think it's illegal. I think it's against the rules. Sidekick.
Dominic Cruz is saying, I feel like Staropoli could get ahead in this round if he could just stop a couple takedowns. Good advice.
In a fight that he's lost two rounds of already.
I don't know what he means. He's distracted by the intimacy. He's not thinking straight. I feel like Staropoli is probably feeling validated right now. He's probably feeling like somebody cares about him. He's probably riding high.
That's right. That was the real core of that whole Dominic Cruz rant against the Monster Energy dude.
What was that? I don't remember that.
You don't?
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. The Molenkamp, I think it was.
Yeah.
It was not that Molenkamp like made him hang out with him and like be friends. It was when Dominic Cruz found out that he was doing it to every other fighter too.
And then he made me feel special, damn it. Yeah, I think you're right.
The sense of betrayal.
Dominic Cruz wishes someone would leverage him into a friendship. Love to be extorted into an artificial friendship, but it has to be special. It has to mean something.
That's right.
Guy just can't want a photo op. And we're back.
Oh, this really is a miserable thing that you've put us through. At least my fight got fun by the last round.
We can share the blame for the next one. It's going to be worse than this in a different way.
Yeah. No. Is he really transitioning to a double leg, or is he just trying to move around with the body lock?
Yeah. His hands are attached, and Staropoli is just sort of aimlessly spinning within the circle of his arms.
Like, he really honestly looks like he has no clue how to off-balance somebody from a full-on hug.
Yeah. Staropoli does not know how to break the grip and get out.
Oh, that was shockingly effective front headlock for a second.
It's to engage in more wrestling.
God.
He's trying to hit a switch. Angrily bashing anything within reach, and we're back to the body lock.
It was more like a dimmer switch than like.
Oh, there we go. Dalidze having one moment of offense and making it painfully clear.
Really seemed like he accidented himself into that moment of offense.
Making it painfully clear, he could almost certainly be being more effective than he has for the entire
game. Yeah.
Staropoli winning a scramble.
And then instantly getting out wrestled. Like, Dalidze. Yeah. Like I said, I think it really is just a, like, when he can shoot from a distance, he's strong.
Yeah, I think you're probably onto something.
And athletic.
Well, what happened there is Dalidze wisely went to his back and made Staropoli look at his face.
That's right. Staropoli had to
disengage and give up top position.
Staropoli's been so hard to out-wrestle just because Dalidze's always behind him and you can't see him. And then the moment he could actually see Dalidze, the fear is this whole Medusa-like effect where, like,
is now that the guy who's been grabbing me? Oh my god.
Oh.
Look at him. He refuses to look in his eye. Just don't look at my face again.
Will Smith and Lindsay's first meeting was in a dark room.
You can imagine. I mean, it probably was very romantic. Look at him. He's just breathing in Star Pauly's ear.
Yeah. Lindsay really does have the kind of fighting style that any number of MMA fighters might mistake for intimacy.
Yeah. I love this when they're both just heated and talking shit.
Yeah, after the fight
could have brought some of that energy into the contest. Would have been great.
Yeah.
Even just talking shit in those positions would have made it more entertaining. Well, do we dare to even watch the decision? Is there a point?
Oh, I suppose we could move it along, huh? Yeah. Let's move it along.
Let's see. I just want one more glimpse of Dolidze's face. It'll keep me awake through the next one. For fear of nightmares.
You got to really jump ahead, too. I'm glad we did, because there's like 10 minutes of filler.
Oh. You know, he looks like genuinely happy. He kind of looks normal. It's just he has a sort of face he puts on for the fight.
Yeah, he has he has resting, unfortunate face.
It's just like an unearned smugness. That's like the mask of confidence I think he puts on in the fight. Here, like receiving the decision, everything. I'm sort of recognizing a humanity in him that I've never seen before.
Wow. You've really grown.
Yeah. I'm impressed. Yeah. It's the beer.
The beer goggles. You're drunk enough now that you're like, hey, that's a pretty man.
I'm experiencing exactly what Velismus experienced.
You're going to wake up tomorrow with him next to you. Start screaming.
Drink a ton of beetroot kvass or whatever they drink in Georgia. I don't know. Georgia alcohol.
Peach schnapps.
Wrong Georgia. Hold on.
It's Bill Algia of Georgia.
Yeah. All right. So apparently a popular drink is a brandy called Cha-Cha. Georgian pumice cha-cha. Brandy. Clear and strong. Between 40 and 65% alcohol.
Damn.
It's essentially grappa. It's grape, okay. Grape wine vodka.
Yeah, no thanks.
Grappa is not bad.
Mm.
They do is they make the wine and then they distill all the stuff that's left over, and it's not bad.
Thank you, resident grappa expert. Let's move on to the next fight.
Fine.
All right, we're jumping in now. Thiago Santos, Johnny Walker, a fight that, by all standards, should have, even if it wasn't going to be high paced. It should have been entertaining.
It should have had some violence.
Yeah.
Should have been a fight.
Yeah. All right. Starting in 3, 2, 1, go.
Oh. You know, I think I'm ready to start blaming Thiago Santos too. Once again, showing my personal growth. Because what's his excuse? Johnny Walker was bad at MMA before.
Yeah, yeah. So Johnny Walker is struggling with the classic conundrum of like Star Pulley.
Yes.
Of coming in totally unready for this level of competition.
Having zero technical foundation, just being a raw, violent ball of violence. And then having to, in the beginning or arguably late stages of your MMA career, try to learn to be good at fighting.
Yeah. So and that's for some reason precedent. Choosing SBG Ireland to do that, to be that place.
Yeah. But there's also, hey, there's precedent for that. Look, people are still joining a Jackson Wink. So, you know, there's precedent to explain what's happening with Johnny Walker, camp change, attempted style change. It usually doesn't work out right away. Thiago Santos, I guess, has like two busted knees, but at least he's, you know, he's supposed to be better than this, man.
Yeah, he doesn't. The busted knee thing certainly would be an excuse for like one comeback fight or something. But yeah. I mean, if he's out there competing at a high level, you got to assume it's because he's got full confidence that he can still fight. You know. Yeah.
In part, it's like a style matchup thing for Thiago. Like, usually he's like at kicking range and then you dash in and then it becomes a brawl for as long as you dare to stay in that range. And he doesn't know what to do when you don't ever enter that range.
Yeah.
Although even then, I don't think we're going to see nearly as many crushing kicks as we should from Santos in this fight.
No. I think a lot of that, too, is just how big and long Santos is.
Walker.
Or not Santos, but Walker is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he really is an imposing figure. Like, uh-huh. He is a literal giant out there.
Mm-hmm.
And
what does Wikipedia say? 6 foot. 6 foot six.
Yeah.
It's actually taller than I thought, even.
Mm-hmm.
6'6". Arms somehow still shorter than John Jones, but he is taller than John Jones by 2 inches.
Yeah.
Look at him. My God.
Yeah.
He is huge.
He is huge. Yeah. He's absolutely huge. And MMA, it's one of the things that I still kind of love about MMA.
Mm-hmm.
Is that all of these career fighters.
I forgot entirely the last fight, by the way, to say when round one was going to start, but it's starting right now.
It's one of the things I love about this sport is that all of these people who can and do and will fight anyone at the drop of a hat and have based their entire lives around how tough they are,
mm-hmm.
still every now and then just meet somebody in MMA where they are totally physically cowed by them.
Sure.
Just are like,
hey, I can speak to this, man. This is a thing it's very easy to look past as an observer. Yeah. But mm-hmm. fighting someone who's really, really tall and has super long limbs is genuinely one of the most disconcerting, like, physical things you can experience.
Well, that's just...
It's like there's a sort of oppressive feeling to being smothered mm-hmm. in grappling, which MMA fighters have to experience. But it's different when it sort of feels like it's you doing it to yourself. When there's someone who's just really physically imposing on the feet and you're like, oh my God, I can't tell how far away they are. I feel like I can't get that close to them. Even if they're not hitting you, there is a like psychological response to someone just towering over you. That is, you know, it shouldn't be that difficult for professional fighters to get over, but this is MMA.
Yeah. And I mean, it just is like, and too, like Santos or Walker, it's not even that he's tall. He really is just gigantic, you know, like he's not tall and stringy.
His
arms are huge. His legs are huge.
Yeah.
He's just a gigantic human.
I kind of think I envision him being lankier than he really is. Every time I see him, like he's just kind of huge.
Yeah.
He looks like a heavyweight.
No, he certainly could be a heavyweight.
For sure.
But the complete lack of dad energy really negates that.
If not for that, he probably should be a heavyweight. I mean, mm-hmm. you don't even have to be good.
Yeah, no.
At all.
He can hit hard. He is wild and fun. There's no reason he couldn't be a heavyweight, but you can see
this man
there is a lack of confidence about himself for fighting other big, powerful people, too.
Yep. This man is not a father.
No.
Not even in the most metaphorical sense.
No, he's filled with wild uncle energy.
Yeah. I don't even know about that. I think this guy would be, your dad would lie and say this guy wasn't his brother. You would just think of him as an older second cousin.
Yeah, which is what I mean, like wild uncle energy is the kind of guy in your family that everybody's just like,
yeah,
He gets invited to the family reunion, maybe.
Yeah, he is your uncle, but he just only ever gets referred to as a family friend.
Yeah.
Here's the family friend who lives with your grandma.
And like, would your parents would never, under any circumstances whatsoever, send you or like have him babysit you or like
no.
And not for any creepy reason or anything like that, but just because like
you wouldn't trust him. He's like,
he would feed your kids alcohol and then like take them on the back of a motorcycle without a helmet on.
Yeah, not his motorcycle.
Yeah.
This is the fight.
My God.
This is the fight. A lot of faints. A lot of faints.
MMA really, fighters really do just get ideas that they cannot. They get these meme ideas.
What are feints for exactly? I haven't really figured that out yet, you know?
But you need them.
I've been told I'm supposed to do them. Good fighters do them.
That whole thing. Just, you know, we got to switch stances a lot.
Confuses
your opponent.
Yeah. Because at a certain point, what does Johnny Walker think the feints are accomplishing? he's fainting. And I'm a big proponent of this, Sam. There's no such thing as an ineffective feint.
No. Right?
It's gathering information. And whatever the reaction is to it, that is information that has been gathered as a result. Yeah. So if you faint the thing and the guy doesn't react, you should try to do the thing.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah.
And if you faint it and he does react, you should file that away to use, you know, to follow up on your future feints.
To be honest, though, I think, you know, Johnny Walker's filing system is probably a garbage bag, like, under his bed.
He's fainted, and both things have happened.
Yeah.
But he doesn't seem ready for when Santos does react. Nor does he seem to derive any confidence from the idea that Santos isn't reacting. He's just doing the feints.
Yeah. He is very twitchy.
That is really what it is. It's almost like he's just spasmodic. Is Michelle Pereira in his corner?
Yeah.
What? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either, but that explains a lot.
He is to blame, too. Yeah.
Yeah. They are incredibly kindred spirits in the cage.
But hey, Pereira made like a really savvy dumb guy adjustment last weekend.
Which one was that?
He fought Andre Fialho.
Yeah, I remember the fight.
And he was like getting pressured and like just wasting energy and was really not looking very good. And then he calculated, if I'm going to be wasting energy no matter what I do, I should probably run forward.
Yeah, yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah, it did.
It was an adjustment, you know? The kind of thing you expect a professional fighter to do. This is more exchanges than I remember in the entire fight. I have a feeling that's the last one we're going to see for the entire round, but...
Yeah, I think Santos just trying the shot and getting stuffed so easily...
Yeah.
Got terrified of the idea of then going back and ever connecting with Walker again.
Uh-huh.
And Walker and Santos both landing winging hooks standing, then convinced both of them that they don't want to punch either.
They're standing so far apart, Zane.
Yeah.
This is not a striking distance.
No. Well, there's a striking distance and sort of like...
I'm struck by how big it is.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
The width is remarkable.
This is like the distance you stand at when you're dueling with swords. When, like, the thing is going to kill you if it touches you. This is not a fist fighter's distance. This might as well be a pistol dueling distance. difficult to land a jab from 10 paces.
That back tattoo Tiago Santos has really is a remarkable thing.
All of his tattoos are so bad. The hammer is a terrible tattoo. I love it. It's so identifiably him, but it is a really stupid tattoo.
Just the huge cross over the chain link fence.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I don't know too if it's an octagon.
It's an octagon in the middle of the cross.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Amazing. So sick. You know, at least the hammer is better than Brock Lesnar's sword.
Yeah, that is one of the stupidest looking tattoos I've ever seen.
It is remarkable that a multi-millionaire would keep that on his body for longer.
Yeah, than, like, it just looks like such a lame weapon. Like,
yeah,
I'm aware that, like, there are dumb fantasy weapons that are, like, impractical. It doesn't even look menacing.
No, no.
If a guy had a sheath, a scabbard on his hip, and he was threatening to kill you and he pulled that out, you would laugh in his face. It is not a threatening weapon.
Oh, I just realized, too, that the cross is actually made up of tribal
it is so sick.
Barbed wire.
Across the arms of which are made of tribal tattoos.
Yes.
On a chain link fence octagon background. It's beautiful.
It is one of the most bro-y tattoos I've ever seen.
It's awesome. Does Johnny Walker have zero tattoos? It's kind of strange. You
know, I don't think he does have any.
His
body is a temple, clearly.
Wow.
Like to think that he actually just has a ton of tattoos and they're all just under his shorts.
Dozens of tattoos on his dick. Just a bunch of signatures. Oh my god.
This fight is miserable.
The feints.
What's at the top of the cross? It's like it's got little wings up there.
Yeah, it does. I have to look. I'm going to Google a picture of that tattoo. I want to see a still image.
I think it's one of those things where, you know, it's kind of like a Lovecraftian thing where if you actually get a clear image of it and stare into it, you're about to hear insane.
Me descend to gibbering insanity.
I'm not sure I'll be able to. I'm not sure what difference that'll make, but I'm here for it.
More gibbering insanity. God, I hate Pinterest. You know, you Google image search and you get a Pinterest result.
Yeah. Also realizing that the chain link is done so that it's like equidistant around all parts of the cross.
Uh-huh.
So that it's not just like a big piece of chain link. It's like a chain link where it's like 4 inches away from all parts. So it's kind of a cross of chain link as well as the cross itself.
I'm just trying to find a good image. It's all the hammer tattoo. It really is an undiscovered treasure trove, the back tattoo. He hasn't always. It's newer than the hammer tattoo as well, because there's images here of him without it.
Well, that does tell you a lot about his taste and maturity.
Yeah, he's really
the hammer tattoo was a young man's mistake, but he's matured into that back tattoo.
I'm proud to say that over time I have become the kind of man who would get this tattoo. I wasn't always this guy. There's no good images of it, Sam. The only one is extremely bitty. And I would love to pause the video and break it down, but.
Like I said, I think that it's one of those things where if you actually found a clear image of it and stared into it.
I'm probably really lucking out by not being able to see it closer up.
Yeah. Oh, man. just.
All right, so I'm just going to get really close to the screen. It is tribal. The arms of the cross are very tribal.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. The chain link is not just. I thought it was just like a larger octagon of chain link.
No,
but it actually extends down the longest arm of the cross.
Yeah, but it doesn't extend. Like, it's not just a flat piece of chain link of like, oh yeah, here's a big box of chain link because it's chain link.
Yeah,
it is actually like form fitted around the cross.
Yeah, there's some symbol in the middle of the octagon, which I can't really discern.
I would have assumed it would just say UFC, but...
I don't think so. It's either like another tribal pattern or something. And then at the top, it looks like the top of like a fasces, you know, like a Roman
sort
of eagle motif.
Mm-hmm.
Is what I'm seeing there.
One of those things where if you weren't a Brazilian dude, you would have questions about what exactly that tattoo was supposed to intone.
I look at the tattoo and I'm like, what exactly did your ancestors get to Brazil? Was it around 1949 by any chance? They suddenly arrived and the Santos family was established. A straight left hand landed from Tiago Santos.
It was originally Stanhouse.
Santos. Sandhus. He landed the left hand. It landed so easily with no return. One wonders why he hasn't already tried it again.
Look, this is not... MMA is not an experimental space. Don't.
Oh, that man, I wish I could pause it. That's such a good close-up angle of the tattoo right there.
Yeah.
I'm going to... That was about like almost exactly halfway through. 18 minutes, 22 seconds. When this fight is over, I'm going to scrub back and get a real good description for our listeners.
Yeah, but it never feels like this fight's going to be over. Like,
no, it never will.
By the time the fight is over, I am going to be so drained.
You heard that, listener. When I finally get this rock to the top of the hill, I'm going to go back and describe that interesting bunny.
You're going to push it. Go. It's going to roll right back down. And you're going to push it right back up again.
But when I get there, I'm going to describe this tattoo to you.
Was that Prometheus or was he the liver?
No, it's Sisyphus.
Sisyphus, okay.
Yeah, Prometheus gets his guts eaten by an eagle.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought.
And then you've got Tantalus. Tantalus is the guy who he reaches for the fruit on the branch and it pulls out of his reach. Mm. Hence the English verb tantalize.
He's the one who killed Odysseus, right?
Tantalus?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know much about the death of Odysseus. And then there's Narcissus.
Okay.
He's the other famous Hades punishment where he, I think he gets to look at his reflection in the water, in the pool of water all day. But every time he bends down to drink, the water recedes.
Mm. That does sound like an appropriate Narcissus punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. This is really...
I would gladly try any of those, by the way.
Getting your liver pecked out?
Yeah.
Just once.
At this moment in time?
Yeah, well, that's true.
They all sound interesting, at least.
We definitely have hit a tenth layer of...
I sure as shit don't deserve this. You know? I know I've done some questionable things in my life, but...
Whole new ring to Dante's Inferno.
Yeah. This is the ninth circle, and it is shaped like an octagon. It's not even a circle.
You're falling through hell, and very slowly growing in your ears. You go lower and lower. You start to hear Face the Pain.
Yeah. Oh, I thought I was going to hear wooing.
No, the dubstep. Woo! It's the dubstep remix of Face the Pain slowly growing in your ear.
I love that version. I was sad when they got rid of it. I thought this is truly, if I think of the UFC trying to modernize, this
it is exactly what their idea of modernization
perfect.
Is.
Perfect. A dubstep remix of a terrible nu metal song 5 years after dubstep was popular. Awesome.
Oh, now you got to wonder when we're going to get the Face the Pain NFT, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, they are selling UFC NFTs now.
I know.
They just started advertising that at the last event.
Yep. You get like an NFT baseball card pack of highlight videos, which
awesome.
Yep.
It doesn't even have to be an NFT. No one knows what they are anyway.
No, well, it's just the UFC's long con goal that they've obviously been aiming for years, which is to actually be able to sell their gifts.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's it.
I want an NFT of a hot dog brander.
Oh, man. Maybe you can have like an eye patch and one of those like police hat.
A series of hot dog branders with accessories.
This hot dog brander looks like it's crying. This hot dog brander has an overbite. This hot dog brander has a mustache.
This hot dog brander's shirt is unbuttoned. This hot dog brander. Yeah, I love that. That's way better than whatever they're going to do.
It really would be a huge improvement. Ugh. Oh, man. God, this fight is bad.
It is hell. Just nothing.
There's a whole round and a half of it left.
Yeah. Just nothing ever develops.
Yeah.
It's just two people spending 25 minutes not learning.
This fights like this are why I want to argue for open scoring.
It wouldn't fix this.
It might. It might help one of these guys to know that they've actually been losing.
I guess. Do you think Johnny Walker thinks he's winning right now?
I think both of them think they might be winning.
Maybe. I mean, it is hard to tell.
Like, I don't know. This just sucks.
I just don't. I've seen open scoring. I am completely unsympathetic to arguments that claim it would work. It's like a fantasy. I've seen it in practice.
Yeah, I don't think that it would make – honestly, I just don't think it would make any real difference.
I've seen bad fights with open scoring. There's the argument out the window right there. I've seen people losing bad fights where they could be doing more.
Yeah.
And the reason they're not doing more isn't because they think they're winning. It's because they don't know how to do more. They feel uncomfortable. They don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. I just think that – I'm for it, but I'm happy. I'd be for it even with the idea that it makes no difference at all.
Whatever. I think that the main thing is the main reason people will not be doing enough in a fight is because they don't feel safe doing it.
Yeah.
Or they don't know how. They're not sophisticated enough as a fighter. It's not because they're out there just thinking that they're comfortably winning and don't have to do more. That is a fallacy.
Yeah. They don't have Dan Severn's little monocle.
No, it is very, very rare that a fighter is genuinely losing a fight while deliberately coasting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I know what you mean.
Whereas if somebody is coasting because they're actually winning, open scoring is not going to prevent them from doing that. If anything, it will give them more license to coast when they know they're ahead.
But I would argue at the same time that, you know, it's the same argument either way, right? That you see fighters who coast when they don't know, so it wouldn't make any difference. Like, it doesn't make it any...
People who are coasting out there deliberately actually coasting are usually pretty right to be doing so.
Yeah.
Vast majority of the time, when somebody is out there coasting, it's because they're clearly winning.
Yeah. So, like I said, I think it probably wouldn't make any difference.
Oh, that was that exchange right there was this whole fight.
Yep. A 1-2, and then Johnny Walker feints an elbow after getting hit and then doesn't throw anything.
And then fainted it again, like, are you sure you're not going to leap into this? And then Santos just didn't engage anymore, and then nothing happened.
Yeah.
Both of them are fighting in a way where they just need the opponent to be attacking them more, except they both look really uncomfortable on the rare occasions when it does happen.
Yeah, no. Certainly neither of them has shown their normal propensity for counter-striking when they actually do get attacked in this fight. They both just look really nervous.
Yeah.
The whole time.
Well, one round left.
Oh. Good God.
Okay, I have to turn the volume up. I have to see what is being said.
One round left and deep breaths right now.
I think we're up. Do what you've been doing. John Kavanaugh said, do what you've been doing, feint inside kick, and also feint outside kick.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Basically just said, everything's going great. You're winning. Go for it.
Well, hey, maybe you're right. Maybe open scoring would have at least gotten through John Kavanaugh's
exactly
tectonically dense skull.
I'm waiting to hear the booth say those were good instructions.
Yeah.
Okay.
DC is completely on point here.
Yep.
I don't know why they're confident that they're winning. Good point, DC.
Yep.
John Kavanaugh is really a terrible coach. I'm just going to go ahead and say that.
I got no reason to defend the guy. And his track record does not speak to being an exceptional coach by any standard.
No. From what I've heard, the man knows his jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
I'm willing to believe that, especially because it is clearly my weakest area of understanding.
That's right. You can tell me anything about jiu-jitsu, I'll believe that.
Yeah, so I'll give him that one. But as a corner man, as a overall MMA fighter preparer, as a guy who occasionally has expresses like broad conceptual ideas about combat sports, he's a dunce.
Yeah.
This is the guy who said, if I had any advice for MMA fighters, it would be not to throw 1-2s because it is statistically the combination that gets countered the most, which,
Wow. Really not thinking that one through, John.
Yeah. That's like the graphic of the plane with all the bullet holes in it. Like, there's something there about, like, it gets countered the most because it's the most useful, you idiot.
Yeah.
That's why people have to counter it, because it works, which is why it gets thrown so much.
Yeah.
If I had advice for wrestlers, it would be not to go for takedowns. So statistically, that's the thing that gets you submitted the most. Is when you try to take your opponent down. So as a wrestler, you shouldn't do that.
That's right.
Brilliant. Here we go. Thiago Santos lands the cleanest punch of the fight.
Yep.
As Walker throws a terribly telegraphed kick. Santos responds by going back to the kick that just got countered. And not.
Oh, man.
And again. Now he's spinning. Spin the other way. Maybe that'll work.
No.
Santos at least does seem to have had throughout this fight the sort of feeling that he'll land a really big shot and be like, all right, that's the round.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right? There is sort of a sense of that in this.
Yeah. Which, yes. I mean, I think it's also just, you know, it's the nerves thing of just being like, well, if I had some success, I'm not going to try my luck and see how much more success I can have. I'm just going to let that be the success and not get hurt.
I'm not trying to look a gift horse in the mouth.
Yeah. I'm always amazed at how poor a lot of the macro level ideas are that come out of longtime MMA people. There's a lot of like real failure to look outside oneself in this sport.
Which is probably common to many fighters, but
yeah,
I also think it is a problem in MMA that, like, frankly, a lot of coaches are just getting away with it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
we are still not that far removed from the idea that, like, a whole lot of the longtime coaches in the sport never actually fought MMA, ever.
Yeah. Yeah. It is genuinely, like, full of charlatans. And also just a lot of people who aren't charlatans, but MMA is their sport, or they come from a grappling background and they don't know what they don't know about many other aspects.
Yeah. It is funny because you say, you know, I want to be like, they've never done MMA. And then the flip side is that doing just MMA does not otherwise prepare you for any other kind of coaching. Like,
no.
Not going to teach you how to coach wrestling if you've only done MMA, or teach you how to coach boxing if you've only done MMA.
Yeah, there's a reason that this is a sport where, like, every like 6 years, one person succeeds with one technique, and then everyone gets obsessed with it because, like, oh, this is now going to define the game, this one move.
Yeah,
and it's never like a, you know, some things like jabs and feints have come along much more broadly and slowly. That's never the thing that catches the attention of the MMA world.
Yeah.
It's always like a gimmick.
Yep.
Wow.
I am glad though that the volume movement is catching on pretty fast.
The what?
The volume striking movement is catching on
pretty fast. I think it will actually force better defensive striking. I'm also happy for that.
Yeah, it seems to be something that a few fighters have been really like waiting for that evolution to help them along.
Yeah.
And they're jumping into it, and it is forcing people to really have to reckon with the change in the game.
Yeah. At the moment, I think we're still in the phase of most people just realizing they have to be crazy aggressive. But
yeah,
at some point there are going to be people whose natural inclination is to counter that style.
Yeah.
And not to try to adhere to it. And it is possible, folks. There aren't even corners in the goddamn octagon, Zane. There's no excuse not to be a good striker off the back foot.
No,
maybe that's part of it, actually.
Yeah.
Boxers get, you know, like, it really sucks to get trapped in a corner. So, like, the consequences are dire if you let somebody trap you in a 90-degree corner.
Yeah, well, you know, boxing, too, like, the whole... The function of how a boxing fight works is wildly different than an MMA bout.
Sure.
Where, like, if you get a little momentum in a boxing bout, it's very hard for your opponent to take that momentum away from you without being able to, without having to actively defend, deal with, and re-attack you.
Sure.
You know, you can't just be like,
Very rarely is it just, oh, I'm going to get mad and run forward.
Or
then I'll be the guy winning for a few minutes.
Or I'll just retreat and, you know, get out of the way of this boxing. Because if you stop throwing in a boxing bout, they're just going to call it. They're going to wave it. You know, they're just going to be like, oh, well, it's TKO for the other guy.
Sure.
So you actually have to be, like, active and thoughtful of everything you do.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
All right.
All right.
I kind of want to see what they have for replays, but I am going to scrub back in a moment here, and I want to look at that tattoo.
My dog is also very much done with this fight at the moment.
The quietest I've ever heard, Molly. Just barely made a peep.
She's grunting at me right now, but only very lightly.
Let's skip forward and put replays. It'd be really funny if they just don't have a single replay, because why? What would they show?
like those fighters who have who've only lost in the octagon and then they have to put together a hype reel for them for their next fight. Uh-huh. It's all like half clips of moves that they started and did not work at all, but they're not going to show the back half of the strike.
There were indeed no replays. Very funny. Okay, here we go. Coming up on that 18 minute 20 something second mark.
All right,
it's a tribal armed tattoo. It's like a... What is that in the middle? It's like a mask or something?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to... So yeah, there's lots of tribal...
It does have like a winged scepter head at the top.
Yeah. And at the bottom has like a some sort of little flourish as well.
Some vaguely phallic sort of shape.
Yeah.
What I can only describe as a glands bottom of the cross. I thought for a second it was like an Irish harp, which would have been really funny in the middle, but maybe it's just a design. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know what the hell that is. All right. Well.
Wow.
The mystery will remain.
Now Johnny Walker's back. Just acne. No tattoos.
All right. I'm going to stop this before we get too far into trying to describe Johnny Walker's.
Let me describe the rest of his torso. The nipples. Let's start with the nipples. Small, brown.
Hey, everybody. You can find me on Twitter at Zane Simon. You can find Connor on Twitter at Boxing Bush. You can find both of us over at BloodyElbow.com. Give them a like. Subscribe to our podcast over on Bloody Elbow Presents on SoundCloud, YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, all those good places.
Strangely and we will vascular be back for nipples.
In...
Vascular areolas. Never seen the like.
We'll be back in... a few short weeks. Let's see, when's our next UFC break? It is 5/12/1926, 5/12/19/26, April, first week of April. We'll be back.
They're highlighted with mascara or something.
All right, everyone. Thanks, and we'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to this Bloody Elbow Presents production. To check out more of our content, hop over to the Bloody Elbow Presents SoundCloud and iTunes pages, and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is also titled Bloody Elbow Presents. We're also on Apple TV, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Player FM, and Amazon Music. Just search for Bloody Elbow Presents, and you'll get brand new shows throughout the week, including Care Don't Care, The Mookie and Crookie Show, The Best of the Come On Now MMA Podcast, Brooklyn's Corner, the MMA Vivisection, the Level Change Podcast, Show Money, the Sixth Round Post Fight Show, Sixth Round Retro, the MMA Depressed Us, and Radio Style Play-by-Play for every UFC pay-per-view. You can also follow us on Twitter at Bloody Elbow and on Facebook at facebook.com/Bloody Elbow Blog, and of course on BloodyElbow.com.